How do we go about the task of cross-cultural missions? Hello, welcome to Good Word. I am your host, Dave Thomas. We are, during these 13 weeks, talking about missions from a Christian perspective, and today we will be talking about how we go about the task of doing mission to cultures unlike our own. In particular, this lesson is going to invite us to consider the interactions Jesus had with those outside of his own people group. And we have a number of stories that we're going to look at. In fact, if you listen to Good Word last week, you will find that we cover some of the same stories. Hopefully they will be of benefit. I'm happy to have as my conversations partners again today, Brant Berglund, Professor of New Testament, and Paul Dibdahl, who is a missiologist. So, Brant and Paul, we have some of the same stories. Jesus' interaction with a Samaritan woman, which we didn't talk about last week. We have the one of the Roman army officer. We have the one of the devil-possessed man up in Gadara. And we have the 10 lepers. And the group of Greeks who asked Philip if they could see Jesus. So our question then has to do with, can we pick up any hints, any little strategies that could help us understand how we might best go about proclaiming the gospel to people who are not like us? And maybe we could start with the story in John chapter 4, the woman at the well. And while I'm talking, I just want to make an observation to everyone that this woman usually shows up in dialogue as a very loose woman, a quasi-prostitute, and my own opinion of her is very different from that, because I happen to think she was a very spirited, independently-minded woman who was also very beautiful, because men don't line up to marry quasi-prostitutes. She had had five husbands, I think she had, and now she wasn't married. I tend to read that she had given up on the institution of marriage because her husbands tried to dominate and break her spirit, and she finally said, enough of that. I don't know whether that's a crazy idea. It seems to fit the story better. And besides, you remember when she went back to her village, people were very interested in listening, and had she been a prostitute, I doubt they would have had much to say. But anyway, any comments on this story? What can we learn that's missional?
I would say from the very start, the way John writes the story, he puts here in verse 4 a very short sentence, and if we don't read the Bible carefully, we can miss important things. It says, but Jesus needed to go through Samaria. For a Jew, they never needed to go through Samaria. In fact, if they went from Jerusalem to the region of Nazareth, which would have been up north, or the Galilee area, they would have bypassed it. They would have gone down to the Jordan River Valley and traveled north that way. They would have bypassed Samaria. Jesus had to go through Samaria because he had a divine appointment.
You think that's what it was?
Absolutely.
Maybe he was trying to avoid trouble somewhere, Brant.
Yeah, I think he knew exactly why he's going. He's expecting a visit at the well.
Okay.
Yeah, and if he was trying to avoid trouble, he would have avoided Samaria because of the tension between Jews and Samaritans at that time. So
yeah. I seem to have read that the disciples weren't happy going through there, or maybe that's just an imagining of mine.
But, no, they're surprised Jesus is talking to the woman. They don't ask him any questions out loud, but they're uncomfortable.
Now, the conversation that unfolded is actually a very interesting one. Any observations you want to make of that? I mean, for example, I am interested that Jesus let the woman lead the conversation. Mm-hmm. He didn't steer it. He let her take it. And then he kept bringing up things that, she ended up being uncomfortable. I'm not sure that's why he did that. But, you know, he kept offering insights that she made another excursion over here and another excursion over there. But he kept kind of circling this conversation, looking for a way to make it missional. See, I don't know.
And I think that's a principle right there. You asked the question, you know, about ideas about cross-cultural missions. When you are dealing with someone from a different perspective, it's important to invite them into the conversation rather than it being a one-way, I am going to share with you as an expert everything you ought to know. Now listen to me. Jesus asks a question, like even solicits her help. Mm-hmm. will you give me a drink?
Yeah, let's pause there for a minute, Paul, because I find that also very interesting, because you create a very interesting dynamic when you ask somebody to do a favor that is actually linked to well-being. Like if you're on the side of the road with a beat-up car and you ask somebody for help, they're going to react very differently than if you demand something. And here, Jesus must have been thirsty in that part of the world. If you don't have water, you die. That's true in most parts of the world, but I mean, he had no way of getting water out of the well, so he asks her a favor, which immediately creates a sense of human – is obligation the right word?
Sure.
I mean, how can I not help you?
Sure.
And especially in the Middle East where you are obligated to give a cup of water to anyone who asks, even if they're an enemy.
Yeah. So how can she not respond? And then, but she is surprised. Well, what's this all about? So anyway, I interrupted.
Yeah, the question then leads to the kind of conversation that you already alluded to here, where there's a give and take. There's some genuine interaction. It's not a monologue on the part of the missionary sharing with the heathen native. It's genuine. It's genuine human interaction. Yeah. That Jesus attends to closely, and therefore it rather quickly goes to some depth. It's not just surface talk. And I think we would be shocked through the day if we simply approach the day with this sort of perspective, that in the conversations that I have, I'm actually going to listen to what's being said. And I think when we're really listening, conversations change from just the surface. We begin to talk with people about things that really matter if they know we're really listening.
And I'm also interested in this talk because Jesus makes comments like being living water. In other words, he takes a common substance or an element that's part of the conversation and then makes it an instrument by which he triggers thoughts of ultimate things in our minds, which I think is interesting. One more thing on the story, and then we'll probably go to another one, but how do you overcome these social protocols that prevent us from being collegial across certain lines? I mean, Jesus is completely unfazed by the fact that she's a Samaritan. That is not a concern of his at all, and he's not particularly worried about what other people think.
Jesus seems very clear about his, if we can use the word theology, although sometimes that word can be a little trite for the way Jesus might think about it when we consider that he's God. But Jesus' theology of worship, he's very clear on that. The woman says, you Jews say it's in Jerusalem, you must worship. We Samaritans say it's on Mount Gerizim. Jesus turns and says, look, the mountain doesn't matter. What matters is the heart and the attitude and the spirit of the worshiper. And that's what God is truly looking for. Jesus was very clear in his own position on many things. He was also clear on his purpose with her. He wants to give her something that she needs, regardless of her Samaritan status or even her female status. It's something vital to all humans, and that's a need for satisfaction. Faction in life for a deep sense of being loved and cared for, and Jesus offers her that.
Yeah. And I, of course, am intrigued by the fact that when she realized who she was talking to, she ran back to her village, and I've always wondered how she so quickly captivated such a large amount of interest. I don't know how to answer that, but maybe you do. Let's move on and talk about the 10 lepers. Last week we talked about the man, the demoniac in Gadara, and if we have a few minutes, we might come back to that. The Syrophoenician women we talked about, but what about the story of these 10 lepers that come to Jesus and he heals them? Anything there that's missional that we can talk about?
We've kind of touched on this subject maybe already. Maybe it was last week even. But Jesus, at various times, and actually I think this is through Scripture, we find that we are to learn lessons from people that we might not admire, that we might think are somehow less than us spiritually, that they aren't chosen by God in the same way that we are. And yet Jesus holds some of these foreigners, heathens, he holds them up as positive examples. So mission isn't just about us sharing with them. Well, I feel like a broken record. I think I've said this already, but it's a two Yeah, missions is a two-way street where there are things for us to learn from other people that we might have prejudged as somehow unworthy or somehow less important than we are. And this is one of those occasions where a Samaritan is the one that shows gratitude.
And see, I thank you, Paul. I also wonder about this because of the disrepute that the lepers were held in. You know, there was a common perception that disease and sin were linked. Mm-hmm. And if not your sin, then maybe the sin of a previous generation. And I've wondered in my own mind the impact of Jesus actually interacting with these social outcasts who are sinners. Sure. And then healing them. I mean, what did people conclude from that?
It's the double whammy here. He's a leper, so God must have cursed him. And he's a Samaritan. That's extra bad. And yet somehow this is a man that responds appropriately to the work of God in his life.
And I wonder what other people thought about the fact that he was now well. I mean, is it commonly believed that your sins must be forgiven if you get well?
And we don't find any indication that the other 10 the other 9 were not healed because they didn't come back and give glory. No. They're all healed, but this one was the one whose change was a spiritual change, not just a physical change.
Yeah. And it is interesting, though. It doesn't say that the other 9 were Samaritans. And so I'm left to wonder if adversity has not broken down some of the barriers that you can't associate with people unless they like you in good times, but in bad times you can associate with anybody. Mm. Well, very, very interesting. I think that it has always struck me, even from the time I was a little kid, that this man was thankful. And I suppose that there's a missional lesson too there, although I would want to be very careful with it because I know some missionaries who would like to be thanked. But the fact that thanks does come may be evidence not that you did your work well, but that the Spirit of God brought somebody to faith and their gratitude spills over in many good ways. So,
and maybe just a kind of direct lesson that we, like the Samaritan leper, should not forget to express gratitude at our healing, at our salvation that God has provided to each one of us.
That's a very nice point, Paul, because we are actually at one time were the lepers and the Samaritans, and by the grace of God, those who come to faith are not that way. And so that's a good lesson and maybe a concluding lesson for today, that our gratitude should be manifest. I wonder if the other people were so excited they just forgot about it, but so it is anyway. Well, thank you, Paul and Brent, for a good and happy discussion here. We'll look forward to being together again next week when we'll talk about Peter and the Gentiles. But my thanks to David Olson, our engineer, and my thanks to those of you who listen for Good Word. I'm David Thomas.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.